Hey everyone, it's Jonathan, and welcome to my annual recap of the last year, looking at the best of 2025, talking about movies, getting input from guests, and letting you know what's coming up in the coming year. I've had so much going on in January that it's taken me until now to actually record this recap. My original intent was for this to come out mid-January, but as I type this on the last day of January, I feel like it might end up mid-February instead. January has been a lot, in more ways than one. Most of the a lot that has to do with my podcast is covered in my recent update, which you can find before this episode, which includes moving my podcast off Spotify and starting a new podcast. I'll eventually have more information about that, but for now, I've got a lot to talk about from the past year. A few things I did, some of my favorite movies, my favorite podcasts I've made, and as I've done the past couple of years, I've asked my friends to join me to give you their recommendations from 2025 as well. I'll start with something I did earlier last year. In April, I went to Dubuque, Iowa to join Nikki, aka Triv, aka Trivial Theater, at the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival. I had no idea that this was a thing. I've lived in Iowa my entire life, and I've never heard of a film festival here, though it is on the complete opposite end of the state from me, which might have something to do with it. Either way, Nikki let me know that she had scored some free tickets and invited me to join her. We spent Thursday through Saturday walking around Dubuque, visiting various historic theaters, hotels, conference rooms, watching movies, and then going back to her place to record a podcast about the day. I'll have other podcasts to share later in my best of 2025, but that was a personal highlight for me and something completely different to the kinds of content I usually make, and one of my favorite things I did this year. Then in July, I went back to Dubuque. Nikki and I had made a list of things in the area that would be fun to do, but obviously our schedule was full with how much stuff we had to do at the film festival, so we decided to plan a week where we could just be tourists around Dubuque and some of the surrounding area. We went to the House on the Rock in Wisconsin, which is an almost indescribable architectural marvel. It's literally a house built into a rock, but it is so much more than that. It's a museum collection of so many oddities and art pieces, I can't even begin to properly describe what this place is. It's one of those things you just have to go and see for yourself. We also went to two caves, the River Museum in Dubuque, which includes a tour of a decommissioned gravel barge and stingrays you can pet. I love stingrays, especially little cow nose rays. On other days, we also took an actual riverboat cruise, visited a mustard museum, and went to the farm where they filmed Field of Dreams. We also recorded a podcast about that, but that will be an episode for the new podcast, so stay tuned. And then one of the first things, and then last things we did, was go to an actual drive-in movie theater. Twice. I'd never been to a drive-in before, that was a first for me, and I guess that will bring me to some of my favorite movies from 2025, because one of the movies we saw at the drive-in, we actually saw twice. Another surprise about drive-ins I didn't realize was that it was like a two-for-one thing, so the later movie, both times we went, was Superman, and I didn't care at all. In fact, it was half the reason I wanted to go again before I left. That actually brought the number of times I saw Superman in the theater to 3, and I am not someone who repeats movies in theaters very often, even if I like them. It is so rare that I will go more than once to a theater for the same movie, even if I like something, but Superman just absolutely blew me away. I went in with very tempered expectations. I trusted James Gunn, he's made some of my favorite superhero movies of the past decade, but Superman is by far my absolute favorite superhero of all time, and there has not been, in my lifetime, a single Superman movie that has truly embodied the character as I know him. I grew up with Superman the Animated Series, and that, along with Batman the Animated Series, set a bar so high that no DC comic book film has ever come close to using the characters in any way that feels real to me. I also watched Lois and Clark as a kid, and then Smallville when I was a teenager, which became an obsession. So Superman has truly been one of my favorite characters for my entire life, and he's just never had a movie where he felt like the man I know him as. I'm sure this is sacrilege to some fans, but I didn't even love the Christopher Reeve movies as a kid. I liked them okay, but I was a very picky and pedantic child, and there were plot holes and lore that didn't make sense. So I had complaints, like flying backwards around the Earth would not turn back time, and what was up with that cellophane S? I've come to appreciate Christopher Reeve's movies more now as an adult than I ever did back then, at least the first two, but it took me a while to really appreciate the performances over the odd story choices. But Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder were nearly perfect casting, despite anything that child me didn't like. The first Superman movie I saw in the theater was the Brendan Routh film in 2006, and I also didn't love that. I liked Brendan Routh, but I didn't like his story. In fact, I think I liked it less than Kid Me liked the originals. Superman Returns was dark and moody and just not fun. Same with the Henry Cavill movies. He was great, his movies weren't. Superman is supposed to be a fun, optimistic character, a down-to-earth Midwestern superhero who always tries to do the right thing, not a dark and broody Batman ripoff who sulks and has a god complex. James Gunn's Superman nailed it. David Corenswet's take on the character was exactly what I've been looking for my entire life. The events he found himself in were dark, but in spite of everything, he tries to remain optimistic and do the right thing, even when he has no idea what that is. I absolutely loved it. I really didn't mean to go on quite this long about one movie, so my Superman review will probably be my longest one here, but I just loved it so much I felt I had to give it its due. There were other excellent movies this year as well, but this one was far and away my favorite. I think before I continue, I'll move on to some of my guests. As usual, I invited some of my friends and frequent collaborators to send me their recommendations from the past year, and we'll kick this off with Carmen.
Okay, so three movies I would recommend from 2025. I'm going to start off with Little Amelie. I really love this movie. A friend of mine took me to the theater to see it. I had no idea what it was about. But the animation was gorgeous, and the story of this little girl and her bond with her caretaker in Japan post-World War II, it was gorgeous. It was really moving. There were several times where I had tears in my eyes watching it. I love it so much, and I can't wait to watch it again. And the next one is The Naked Gun. I really liked this movie. Before I went and saw it, I watched the three original ones, and I just loved all the callbacks to the original. The humor was so on point with the Naked Gun franchise. Liam Neeson was a joy to watch in this. He was so funny and so slapsticky, and I just absolutely love, again, how they didn't dial down any of the humor. It was just still as absurd as a Naked Gun movie should be. I'm very glad I saw it in the theaters. And then Wake Up Dead Man. I'm a big fan of Rian Johnson's Knives Out movies so far, and Wake Up Dead Man for me is probably like second. It's like first Knives Out, then Wake Up Dead Man, then The Glass Onion. I absolutely loved Wake Up Dead Man. I loved Blanc's character in it. It felt like he had a lot of layers going on in this one, more layers than the other films. I loved the preacher in it and his story, and loved the vibes of it overall. How it was set in this little town, and the vibes were very, kind of like rainy, and just such a contrast from the stark, like, white cleanliness of, like, that Millionaire's Island in Glass Onion. So I loved it. And then I also wanted to mention the two big anime movies that came out this year that broke records, Demon Slayer Infinity Castle and Chainsaw Man the Rezae Arc. I watched both of them in theaters, and I love them because I'm fans of both Chainsaw Man and Demon Slayer. I read the manga for both of them, and I was so glad that these came to theaters in America so quickly after their Japanese release, because I could not wait to watch them, and they're just the perfect arcs where the story is at to be adapted into a movie. So if you haven't seen it, I would recommend go watching them. If you haven't seen any of the series, I would catch up on that before watching them. But, gorgeous animation. Like, the two animation studios that did these movies are just amazing. Ufotable is doing a fantastic job blending CGI with 2D elements in Demon Slayer, and Chainsaw Man, MAPPA's just movement and how they really bring life to Fujimoto's illustrations is just unmatched. And then for TV, this year I feel like was really good for Apple TV. I actually kept my Apple TV subscription after Severance Season 2 ended, and I watched The Studio, Platonic Season 2, and only the first episode of Pluribus, but I really, really liked it enough to say, go watch the full show. I need to sit down and finish it. But Severance, The Studio, Platonic Season 2, Pluribus, all came out in 2025, and I love them. Get yourself an Apple TV subscription, even if it's just for a month, and just binge their TV shows, because they are on a roll right now. And I can't wait to see more seasons of Severance, Studio, Platonic Pluribus. Yeah, so that's my recommendations for the year 2025.
Hi, John. It's Callum here from Once Upon a VHS, an 80s and 90s fantasy podcast. I wanted to tell you about a movie I loved, which was released last year, although it's not necessarily a recommendation because it's definitely not a film that will appeal to everyone. So as you know, I'm really interested in fairy tale adaptations, and I'm also a big horror fan. Plus, I really like to support international cinema and women filmmakers. So I was delighted that a film came along which checked all of those boxes, and that is The Ugly Stepsister, written and directed by Emily Blichfeldt. It's a dark, satirical reworking of Cinderella from the perspective of one of the stepsisters, and it deals with struggles around body image and beauty standards. So there's some really gross body horror, and it's pretty explicit, so keep that in mind. But it's really atmospheric, with a great score, some beautiful art direction and costumes, and it also handles the fairy tale and its fantastical elements in a very interesting way for me. So if that description piques your interest and you have a strong stomach, I cannot emphasize that enough, check out The Ugly Stepsister.
Hi, I'm Triv from Trivial Theater, and John, as always, was good enough to have me on to talk about my favorite things of 2025. The year, in my view at least, was incredibly good for movies, specifically horror. Incidentally, my first thing I'm going to talk about is a British movie called Farkham Hall. It kind of plays as a British period piece. Specifically, it's a spoof of Downton Abbey, about a pickpocket working in a grand manor, where murder and romance are shown side by side. If you're looking for something that is incredibly funny in the vein of Naked Gun, I would say that this is a pretty close feel for that. Also, an understanding of Downton Abbey or traditional British culture generally isn't probably a terrible thing to have. But even if you're lacking that, I think it is an incredibly fun movie. It does get a little bit risque at times, and it definitely has quite a bit of swearing. It's rated R, but if you can look past those pieces, it is a belly laugh of a movie. My next one up, incidentally, talking about Naked Gun, is the 2025 Naked Gun. Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson are fantastic. It was cute and enjoyable, well worth a watch. My next one up is a drama called The Housemaid. It kind of harkens back to 90s thrillers, and you'll kind of go back and forth on who did what and when. I highly suggest it. Having spoken about the quality of the movies that came out this year when it comes to horror, I have to talk about my favorite and what I probably consider to be one of the best movies of the year. That movie is Sinners, and it stars Michael B. Jordan in the dual roles of Smoke and Stack. It takes place at the opening night of a juke joint in deep Mississippi back in the 30s, and things go from normal and very, very cool to supernatural in not very much time. And the thing that really stands out to me about this movie isn't just the quality of the acting and the way that everything is handled. The music of this is next level. It covers everything from Irish step dancing to R&B to modern takes on music. It's an incredible movie, and it is well worth a watch if you're gonna pick a horror movie to watch from 2025. My final entry, and actually something I got to experience with John at our local film festival, is a movie called Seance, which was set in 1892 California, where two couples sheltering from a storm in a large house perform a seance to try and figure out what happened to the one couple's dead child. Supernatural shenanigans, or perhaps not supernatural shenanigans, ensue. This one isn't the easiest to find, but if you happen to run across it, it is well worth a watch. Well acted, well directed, and overall just a really interesting movie.
One of my earlier movies in the year that was a pleasant surprise, something that I hoped would be good but I had prepared myself for the worst, was the Looney Tunes movie, The Day the Earth Blew Up. It was so much fun. It managed to capture the classic Looney Tunes humor, but still made it feel fresh and new, which is not an easy feat. I slogged my way through Wabbit back in the day. That attempt at a modern Looney Tunes show was rough. And I loved the Looney Tunes show in, like, 2012, but I loved it for what it was. It did not feel timeless. It felt like a sitcom starring the Looney Tunes, which is what it was. And it was hilarious. Wabbit felt like it was trying to be timeless and failing miserably. This somehow felt like something that could have been made in the 40s or 50s, even if they did have some modern technology. The choice to focus on just three Looney Tunes, Daffy and Porky, plus Petunia Pig, and not try to cram in cameos of absolutely everyone and a half a dozen celebrities, a la Space Jam, really helped this movie to feel focused on its plot and not meander off in a dozen incomprehensible directions, like the recent Space Jam sequel. The new characters they added were great, especially the alien, who people complained online about not being Marvin the Martian, which before I saw it seemed like fair criticism until I actually watched the movie. This character is not anything like Marvin the Martian in any way, and the character of Marvin the Martian would not have worked for this role at all. The new guy was hilarious, and I loved him. Another movie I watched in Dubuque with Nikki, though not in the theater, was K-Pop Demon Hunters on Netflix. That movie blew me away. I'd been looking forward to this one for literally years based on nothing but the title. Ever since it was announced, I think Katie and I have been talking about it every time we recorded our yearly animation ranking episode. I had no idea of the plot, aside from the obvious, but it managed to exceed any expectations I could have had. Not only was it a fun action movie about K-pop stars who kill demons, it was a legitimately awesome musical. Seriously, those songs will be going through your head for weeks after you watch this one. I also have to give a quick shout-out to Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul. That was obviously amazing, but I won't go on about it because Nikki, Sarah, Dan, and I did a whole Wallace and Gromit series last year, so we have a whole podcast episode about how great this one is, if you're interested. And then, of course, I can't not mention Wicked for Good. I absolutely loved it. Obviously, it wasn't as good as Part 1. Everyone knows all the best songs are in the first half of the musical, but it was still amazing. The songs were amazing. The special effects, aside for one de-aged Uncanny Valley Jeff Goldblum in a single scene, were amazing. And of course, the actors, all amazing. I had never seen the original musical when the first movie came out, but after Part 1, I became a huge fan. And while I thought I understood the complaints about splitting the movie into two parts since the musical is just one long 3-hour story, now, having familiarized myself with the musical and listening to the soundtrack so many times in last year, I have to say I think I fully disagree with the people who think this should have only been one movie. Unless they made like a 4 to 5 hour movie, and I definitely don't want that, I still haven't watched the Avatar movies because they are way too long for me to sit through in the theater. Two 2-plus-hour movies was definitely the correct choice for Wicked. And while I'm sure the extra money from cutting it in half was nice, narratively and lengthwise, this needed to be two films. If you are able to go somewhere and watch the stage musical, or find a quote-unquote slime tutorial online, if you watch the musical after having seen the movies, the difference is night and day. I listened to the songs and loved them, and I assumed they would be linked by a bunch of connecting scenes to flesh out the story. And it's kinda not. I mean, the soundtrack is almost the whole musical. There are some connecting scenes, I'm exaggerating a bit, but the musical seems so short and rushed. Rather than feeling like they padded for time for the movies, when you're watching the musical, it feels like they cut stuff out and you're watching it in fast forward. I definitely didn't mean to go on this long about Wicked. I just wanted to say it was good and I loved it. And while the musical is amazing, the movies definitely needed to be two films, and they were even better than I could have hoped for. Other notable great movies from last year were Zootopia 2, Fantastic Four First Steps, and Tron: Ares. And Tron: Ares was a legitimately pleasant surprise. I went into Zootopia 2 and Fantastic Four knowing I would enjoy myself, and they exceeded my expectations. Zootopia 2 was a well-written continuation that fully justified its existence, and Fantastic Four was the best version of those characters I've ever seen. And I say that as someone who loved the originals from the early 2000s. But with Tron: Ares, I went in with moderate to low expectations. And it blew me away. The story somehow made more sense than the previous two movies, and the soundtrack was, as expected, amazing. I know some people had doubts about Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails doing the music when Daft Punk had been such an integral part of Tron Legacy, but if you had seen the latest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated film, you would have known how great the music could be. His soundtrack to that movie was amazing, and this one is as well. One last thing I should mention, and I suppose I could have saved this for the TV section, but this was not a show, this was a one-off special on HBO Max, and it was so outstanding that it just kind of stands alone in its own spot, Adult Swim's The Elephant. This was a special that came out right at the end of the year, but it grabbed me immediately, And it is just an almost indescribable experience. If you grew up playing either Exquisite Corpse or Who, What, Where, When, Why, just imagine that, but in animation form. Three teams all doing one third of a half hour short, having absolutely no idea what the other teams are doing. And somehow, beyond all reason and logic, the story actually comes together and it works. It works so much better than you would ever imagine. If you have HBO Max, you need to watch The Elephant. It was mind-blowing. And again, this is something I won't go on too much about because I already recorded a podcast about it. I was not really planning to record much of anything in January beyond this episode, and I had no podcast plans when I started watching The Elephant. But by the end, I was like, I have to talk to somebody about this. So I got Eli Sanza and Conrata Falco on board, and as soon as iHeart Animation is back on for Season 8, this will be the first episode up. Okay, before I get into more TV, I will pause here, and I've got some more recommendations from my friends.
Hey, everybody. I hope that you are doing well. I'm Rachel with Rachel's Reviews, and it's a lot of fun to be asked to talk about my favorite movies of 2025. I saw almost 300 feature films in the year, so it was a lot. But my five favorite were, at number five, I have Kiss of the Spider Woman. I just really loved the friendship story. I loved the nod to and the homage to old school Hollywood musicals and the artistry behind it, the music. It was really fun. And then at four, I have The Naked Gun. I did not expect to like this as much as I did, but I was laughing from start to finish. It just really, really made me laugh. And that's all I have to say, especially a long sequence involving a kind of a Hallmark parody that I thought was so funny and so well done. And of course, would resonate a lot with me. Then number three, I have Sorry Baby. I really responded well this year to movies that blended the humor with the drama and had a certain degree of authenticity in that regard to me. And Sorry Baby was one of the best. Her processing her trauma through like a certain level of awkwardness and humor, I was just so authentic and well done. Script was great. Particularly, there's an incredible scene where she has a panic attack and there's a sandwich man who helps her through the panic attack. And that whole scene was just one of the best depictions of anxiety I've ever seen. It's really good. And number two, I have Is This Thing On? I think I like this more than it seems like most people, but I loved how he found this new skill of stand-up comedy to help him process his divorce. And how often in life do we not only use humor to help process the tough things in life, but also a new skill, a new experience, new people, new things help us to be able to connect and process tough things. I know, I just thought that was really true. And I thought their relationship was so well done and beautifully portrayed by both actors. It just really worked for me on all levels. And then my number one is Sentimental Value. I just think all together, this had the best script, the best acting, the best story of any movie that I saw in 2025. I definitely really connected with it, with working with your family, working with having a, you know, your father-daughter relationship, or, you know, I have a much better relationship with my father, but just like how that can ebb and flow and the dynamics and the resentments and positive things and all of that. But I know, so that felt very true to me, everything with the relationships, but it was still pleasant to watch. It was, you know, it's not like one of those heavy, heavy movies like a Hamnet or something like that, which I enjoyed but didn't love. But I just think that this is the most well-rounded screenplay, and the performances are so good. Story is really good. So Sentimental Value is, I think, the best of the year. So there you go. That's my thoughts. Let me know what you think, and Happy New Year.
Hey, everybody. This is Conrado calling in from Queens, New York, to share with you some of my favorite things from this year. I think I'm going to do something a little bit different this year. I'm just going to focus on one thing, which is the most fun movie-going experience that I had all year was when I was able to go to the I think this was the New York premiere of the newest Matt Farley movie, Evil Puddle, directed by, you know, his longtime collaborator, Charlie Roxburgh. Now, Matt and Charlie, they're two guys from New England who basically spend their time making movies with their friends and family whenever they can. And they've been doing this for years. So this was the first time that I got to see one of their movies with them, with an audience. Over the last few years, there's been a small cult that keeps growing around them that is really into their unique kinds of movies. And these are completely, you know, low budget movies made in New England. A lot of, you know, non-professional actors in the supporting roles, and they are so charming and fun and funny. It is not, for me at least, it's not like that kind of like, oh, look at this bad movie that is so cheap, let's make fun of it, but rather it's like a true testament to the power of making movies with your friends. And Evil Puddle, which is their latest movie, is really one of their best. It's like, it's this, you know, kind of a disaster movie of this small town in New England that gets, you know, into trouble because there's a problem with their water supply. The water is basically making everybody freeze. And so the whole town goes into lockdown mode, and, you know, there's a huge cast of characters, and they all are trying to find different ways of getting rid of the problem, and there's twists and turns, and you will not believe how many, you know, twists and turns there are in the movie. And that's the other thing. These movies are really well written in terms of, like, they have so many small jokes, and they all pay off each other. I really would recommend any of their movies. They're all available, or at least most of them are available to watch online, streaming in one way or another. Evil Puddle, which is the latest one, I don't know if that's available streaming yet, but I would definitely recommend that. But if you want some older movies from them, I definitely recommend, some of my favorites are Don't Let the River Beast Get You. That is probably the funniest one that I've seen from them. There's Local Legends, which is a little bit more of a, you know, personal autobiography. It's a great place to start, so you can get the hang of, like, what makes these guys, and especially Matt Farley, who is the lead actor, co-writer, and producer in all these movies, what makes him so special and such a unique character. And there's also Magic Spot, which came out a couple of years ago, which is really, really charming movie, again, about a small town, and it would be a great thing to watch this winter. So I hope everybody had a good 2025, and I hope next year, actually this year, 2026, will be even better. All right, bye.
Hi, my name is Jack Harrison Quintana, and I had the pleasure this year of being pulled into Jonathan's podcasting world. And so a few of the things that I enjoyed this past year in culture, I've got two films, two TV shows, and one comic series. The films are Tron Ares, which I think we're going to talk about more in a future podcast episode, as well as One of Them Days by Lawrence Lamont. On TV, what I really enjoyed was King of Drag in the U.S., which was the first drag king competition TV show, and Anne Shirley on Japanese TV, which was a remake of a 1979 animated classic telling of Anne of Green Gables on Japanese TV. It was a pleasure to kind of get it updated with all the benefits of our contemporary animation technologies. And then my favorite comic series this year was Immortal Legend Batman, which takes the characters from Batman and uses the tropes of a Japanese tokusatsu series like Super Sentai, which inspired Power Rangers. It's kind of transforming heroes, martial arts, etc. And I thought it was an extremely successful take on that story. So thank you so much for including me, Jonathan, and see you more in this new year.
On the TV front, I feel like I say this every year, but I did not watch as much TV as I wanted to. I used to be so into sitcoms and any high-profile sci-fi drama, but these last few years of streaming services canceling things after one season has scarred me, and I rarely start anything new unless I know it's actually going to be finished. The only exception has always been anything Star Wars and some Marvel things, but this year I'm even behind on Star Wars. I somehow have not even watched the final season of Andor. I promise I will do that soon, and I'm making that promise to myself because I actually want to see it so bad. I just haven't had time. It's going to be one of the first things I watch when I actually have a break. I did watch Star Wars Tales of the Underworld, and it was amazing, as all the Star Wars Tales of series have been. This one focused on Asajj Ventress and Cad Bane, who are two of my favorite Star Wars villains of all time. The Cad Bane storyline actually gave him a really compelling backstory, which I was not expecting, and the Asajj storyline gave her a believable and satisfying redemption arc. She's been missing in action for so many years, aside from a brief appearance in the final season of The Bad Batch, so it was nice to see some of what had happened between her last appearance back in the Clone Wars series and then her apparent reformation in The Bad Batch. Another thing I have yet to watch is the most recent season of Doctor Who, although I am less excited about catching up on that one than I am Andor. I do want to watch it. I do enjoy Shuri Gatwa's take on the character, but his first season was such a mixed bag, even though there were a couple episodes I loved, and I have been thoroughly spoiled for what happens in the season finale of this latest season. So now knowing that his time as the Doctor has been cut short, as well as how they chose to end his story, just seems like a frustrating mess. And I am less enthused to finally watch it for myself. I definitely will, it's just not a priority right now. Weirdly, what was a priority was re-watching a few older shows beginning to end. My cousin Sasha and I started the year by going through The Vicar of Dibley, of all shows. I had not seen that since I was a teenager, and even then I don't think I'd ever seen the full series. I definitely enjoyed parts of it more than I did back then, but I have to say the longer it went on, the more off the rails it got. I love the premise and the characters, but I was a bit over its relentless innuendo towards the end. Or should I say, out-uendo, because at certain points it felt like they stopped trying to be clever with it, which is where it started to get annoying. As a whole, I do have fond memories of the show, and I definitely recommend the first season for Britcom fans, but my recommendation probably gets lower and lower as the seasons go on. But it is a short series, so it was never a slog even when it got annoying towards the end, so it's still worth it. After that, we moved on to Gravity Falls, and Sarah joined us. Sasha and I hadn't watched it all the way through since the original run, and Sarah had never seen it. We had watched a few certain favorite episodes multiple times, and we'd shown several to Sarah, but it was so much fun to start at the beginning and go through the whole show. And then after that, the three of us moved on to The Good Place, which will probably always be one of my favorite shows, even if I don't fully love the ending. Sasha and I had been talking about watching it since we'd watched The Vicar of Dibley, so I bought the Blu-rays, and then we ended up on Gravity Falls instead, so The Good Place waited until we finished that, and Sarah decided to join us for that as well, and I kind of expected her to wander in and out as I watched it with Sasha, but she got just as engrossed in it as we were. So I guess I haven't completely gotten away from watching TV, I've just gotten away from watching new, scripted TV by myself. I've opted for sharing old favorites with other people instead. This year I need to get back into actually watching TV by myself. I'm so behind on all my favorite shows like Bob's Burgers and Abbott Elementary. And there have been a bunch of shows in the last few years that have been recommended to me that I've never started. I've kind of talked about this with my friend Sam, and we both kind of feel like our phones and social media slash short videos and reels have basically taken over the time we used to have for TV, and we're both trying to break that habit. You don't even realize how much time the phone is taking until you look up and realize your whole evening is gone. Which is kind of bizarre, because despite how much time I waste on Instagram or whatever, I can't think of anyone in particular who really stands out as someone I feel like I have to mention as a must-follow. Last year I had a couple people who were so genuinely funny I had to shout them out in this episode, but the main person I feel like that about right now, off the top of my head, is still my favorite from last year, Mummy Joe, and I don't think he released nearly as much this year as he did in 2024. He finished his Kid Vampire series and took a well-deserved break, but he's had some genuinely hilarious and somehow still touching videos this year, like the one about the imaginary friend whose child is afraid to tell him he doesn't exist, and the existential nightmare turned emotional feel-good story that somehow became. You wouldn't expect a doodle about an alien named Blorgween who was born from an exploded can of cream corn could almost make you cry, but somehow it does. And then Bird Cowboy seems like it's just going to be a cute little cartoon about a bird who's also a cowboy, but it has some genuinely smart wordplay, a touching story, and an amazing song, all crammed into a 3-minute runtime. If Mummy Joe doesn't someday get a movie deal, I will be shocked. He deserves it so much. I guess one social media personality who I can mention is Andy Marie Tillman. I followed her a couple years ago after she released a series of videos playing an Appalachian spoof of Nosferatu called Nashferatu. But these past few months, she's kind of become a favorite person that Sarah and I have come back to multiple times to watch her short videos, spoofing various family members and people she knows. She just has a gift for impersonation, and you can tell that everyone she plays is a real person that she's deeply familiar with. Even Nashferatu, who is a vampire, is still definitely based on a kind of familiar, specific real person. She's just so great, so if I can only recommend one new person to follow online, it can be her. Before I get into my favorite podcast I did last year, I have one more friend we'll hear from. Stanford Clark sent in his top 10 movies of 2025.
Hi, John. This is Stanford Clark. Thanks so much for including me on your 2025 recap. I've got 10 films that were my favorites of the past year, and I'll just go from number 10 to number 1. So at number 10, I've got Fantastic Four, First Steps. This is a Marvel Studios film. Not that we necessarily needed a remake of the Fantastic Four, but we kind of did because I don't think these last films have been particularly good, and this film was a blast. I was really impressed with the retro production design and art direction that they chose to use. And also just thought the performances were really great. Everybody, particularly Pedro Pascal and Vanessa Kirby, were really good. And just a great action movie and what you'd hope that a superhero movie would be. So Fantastic Four, First Steps, really, really fun. At number 9, I've got Wicked for Good. So I've probably complained to you and many others about how I was disappointed that they chose to split this film adaptation of the Smash Broadway play Wicked into two films. I thought it was just a real money grab. And many films, and I think particularly the classics, The Sound of Music and My Fair Lady, were able to successfully have it in one film and with an intermission in the middle. I think I still would have preferred that. However, all the bad feelings went away when I saw the first Wicked film, and then Wicked for Good is just the same. I was really smitten by the gorgeous production design and costumes and art direction, and I'm just, you know, so in love with the performances by Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo in those roles. I just loved both Wicked and Wicked for Good. All right, number 8, another superhero movie. It's Superman. I haven't really liked any of these latest Superman films for a while. So I just thought this film was a real return to who I think Superman should be. Just a terrific script and direction from James Gunn, who is, you know, now or currently running the DC Comics films for Warner Brothers. We'll see what happens with the sale of Warner Brothers. But anyway, this I just thought was a really great film. I particularly loved the performances and the chemistry in between David Corenswet and Rachel Brosnahan, who play Clark Kent and Lois Lane. And I've got a total crush on Rachel Brosnahan, too. So just a terrific, terrifically entertaining, great film. I love Superman. Next for me is at number 7 is Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. You know, this is not a sweeping biopic about the life of Bruce Springsteen, but it really focuses on just this short, I guess relatively short period of time about his kind of in his rise to big stardom and the creation of the album Nebraska. And it's a really intimate and thoughtful moving film, at least was for me, about the creation of art and what's going on with the artists as the art's being created. Jeremy Allen White plays Bruce Springsteen, and his performance is fantastic. And I think really of note also is Jeremy Strong, who plays Springsteen's manager, John Landau. Just a thoughtful, great drama. I really, really love Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. At number 6, I have F1, the movie. I love automobiles so much. So this was just heaven on the big screen. Such solid direction from Joseph Kosinski. What an exciting film.
incredible sound design and editing. I got to see it in IMAX, which was such a treat. In fact, I was talking to a friend who just has nothing but regret for not seeing it in IMAX. I was able to see it on the big screen, but seeing it in IMAX was honestly something really, really special. Brad Pitt plays this grizzled veteran race car driver who's brought back into the mix. Javier Bardem plays this, his friend and kind of this crazy manager dude, but he's very likable. Kerry Condon's great in it as kind of as the romantic lead, but also as, I guess to say the romantic interest, but also as part of the pit crew. Just great, great acting all around. The thing that was really so surprising to me, too, was that I actually happened to be at a race. It was at the 24 Hours of Daytona race a couple years ago, and they were actually filming there. So In a way, they filmed some scenes for this movie there during the race. So I guess in my own way, I kind of felt to be a little small part of the making of this film, which was total nerdy and made me kind of super stoked. So anyway, F1 the movie. I believe it's streaming on Apple TV since Apple was a production partner, but. Wish you could have seen it on the big screen if you didn't, because it's awesome. All right, number five, for something completely different, I've got Hamnet. Hamnet is just this gorgeous, devastating, and really a cathartic film about grief. You know, it's based on a novel about William Shakespeare and his wife Agnes and how they dealt with the tragic death of their son. And Chloe Zhao directs. It is such a beautiful, pensive film. Again, tragic and really, really emotional, but just excellent in every regard. Paul Mescal plays William Shakespeare, and a particular note is Jessie Buckley in her performance of Agnes Shakespeare, Shakespeare's wife. Wow, just such an emotional, beautiful film. Really, really loved Hamnet. At my number four spot is Zootopia 2. So Disney got the team back together. Jared Bush, who runs Walt Disney Animation Studios right now, and thank goodness, I think it's in very good hands with him. Co-directs with Byron Howard, and the whole team just delivered in such a big way. This is just what a sequel should be. It's just, you know, the textbook example of a continuation of a story. It's not a rehash in any way. More character development, fun new characters, interesting plot. Just an absolute winner in every regard. Jason Bateman and Jennifer Goodwin are back again as Nick Wilde, the fox, and Judy Hopps, the bunny. And they are partners now on the Zootopia police force. Anyway, what a fun adventure. What a great film. There's a particular scene in this, and I guess in a way it's a bit of a spoiler alert, but Nick Wilde and Judy Hopps, they basically finally just bare their souls to each other about how they feel about each other. And that scene is, I think, one of the most emotionally resonant and touching scenes of any film that I saw this past year. And you just marvel that it's done in animation. You got these, of course, great vocal performances and also just the wonderful, wonderful artists at Walt Disney Animation Studios. They created this fantastic film. So yeah, Zootopia 2, I loved it. Can't wait to see it again. I have it number three, Tron Ares. And you're probably like, Stanford, what are you thinking? You know, I think I'm the only one of the very few people that even saw Tron Ares, which is unfortunate. Y'all, you should see Tron Ares. Actually, you should see all the Tron movies. All three of them are now playing on Disney Plus. This film, the original Tron came out when I was in high school, and I just instantly fell in love with it. It was so groundbreaking, number one, but also just the whole concept. This is just such fun sci-fi. and that a person could somehow get digitized and put into a computer, and that there's also within the computer is this whole other world and life. I just thought it was such a fun, what a cool idea. And this film, of course, with just the special effects technology that's available now, it looks amazing. Nine Inch Nails did the soundtrack, which absolutely rules. Maybe some of the factors is that Jared Leto is, I think, a bit of a polarizing figure. I think he creeps out a lot of people, well, and myself included, frankly, but he's great in this film. I thought it was perfect as this lead character named Ares, who's from the digital world. But Greta Lee is in it. Absolutely fell in love with Greta Lee in this film. Jeff Bridges is back as Kevin Flynn. Evan Peters and Gillian Anderson play the villains. They're both really good. Anyway, Tron: Ares is such a fun sci-fi, fun adventure movie. Please give it a chance if you haven't already seen it. Again, it's on Disney Plus, and watch the other Tron movies too, Tron and Tron Legacy. All right. Number two, I've got Sinners. I'm not much of a horror movie person. In fact, I'm not at all. I stay away from them. But I had heard really good things about this film, and I'm so glad I went, because it's just an absolute knockout. Of course, it's very R-rated, but this film is this mixed genre of horror and period drama and social commentary that I think, I mean, truly, it's just a cinematic piece of art. Ryan Coogler wrote and directed it, and Michael B. Jordan plays two roles. He plays twin brothers. And again, I marveled at both the technology and the performances that he was, you know, that he was able to play both of these characters, because they share a lot of screen time too. So I thought it was cool how they made that look so good. But just what an excellent performance he turns in, and a great supporting cast, including Delroy Lindo, Haley Steinfeld. It's a tour de force. Absolutely brilliant and breathtaking filmmaking with Sinners. Then my favorite film of the year was One Battle After Another from director Paul Thomas Anderson. Again, same thing, just absolutely marvelous filmmaking. This movie is pretty bonkers. It's got this, it's about these ex-revolutionaries that have to get the band back together again to save one of their children. But it stars Leonardo DiCaprio in a very unique role for him, but he does so well. It's excellent. Benicio del Toro's in it. Teyana Taylor, a relatively newcomer, at least to me, named Chase Infinity, just really steals the show too. She's the daughter that's in danger. And Sean Penn is the villain in this movie. Sean Penn is so good at being bad. What a film. But this movie, again, I mentioned, is crazy. It's nonstop. The filmmaking is stunning. There's this scene near the end of the film that's almost like, I feel like in a lot of ways it's an homage to the Steve McQueen film Bullet. It's got that very famous car chase scene in it. This has, I think it's an homage, given that they use similar cars. There's a Ford Mustang and a Dodge Challenger. Anyway, it's a remarkable film. Again, very R-rated, but what amazing filmmaking. So anyway, that's One Battle After Another, and that's my take on 2025. Looking forward to good movies in 2026. Thanks again, John.
For my best of 2025 podcasts, as always, I put together a playlist on my main YouTube channel. If you're watching this when it comes out, some of these may not be on the channel yet, because one of the first big series I did in 2025 was just for the Disney Movie Marathon. Stanford Clark and Mark Brown joined me to talk about Mary Poppins and Mary Poppins Returns. And then we were joined by a new friend, someone I found while searching for an obscure version of Mary Poppins, Jack Harrison Quintana, who you heard from earlier. We made an episode covering a wide variety of versions beyond Disney, and then we also did an episode on the biopic of the author of Mary Poppins called Saving Mr. Banks. Those episodes are available right now on the Disney Movie Marathon, but they will be coming to my main channel and iHeart Animation during my break, as well as to every version ever, so stay tuned. Earlier this year, I hit 200 episodes of iHeart Animation, and to celebrate, I was joined by Rachel Wagner to revisit the subject of my very first episode back in 2018, Makoto Shinkai's Your Name. When iHeart Animation first started, it was not a podcast, it was just a movie review series, so this time I wanted to do an actual full-length podcast, and who better to join me than the person who introduced the movie to me. I also did two interviews this year, which I have not done in ages. First, I was contacted by Kevin Lima, the director of Disney's A Goofy Movie. He was looking for podcasts to appear on to promote their upcoming documentary, Not Just a Goof. We had a great conversation, and I figured that would be it. I haven't done interviews since I wrote for the Rotoscopers, so imagine my surprise when I was reached out to by another person, Karen Fang, author of a new biography about one of my favorite Disney artists, Tyrus Wong. If you're not familiar with Tyrus, he's the background artist responsible for basically the entire aesthetic of Disney's Bambi, and appropriately, Karen's book is called Background Artist, though it goes through his entire life, which is much more than just Bambi. Bambi is just one short chapter in a long and amazing life, and it was really interesting to read his story and then talk to Karen about him. A few random podcasts I did this year, one with Nikki and Dan, talking about the 1966 Adam West film, Batman the Movie. Nikki had sent me a Blu-ray of that unannounced in the mail, and I figured that meant we had to cover it. And then the three of us were also joined by Sarah to cover the entire Wallace and Gromit series, starting with the short films and going through this year's release of Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul. You can find those episodes now, but I'm also working on extended versions of them to come out during my break, so stay tuned. Nikki and I also covered an obscure childhood favorite of mine, a movie that has not aged particularly well and is not as good as my child mind remembered it being, The Unidentified Flying Oddball. That movie is a trip, and it was so much fun covering it with Nikki. We did that one to pair with another Disney podcast that Stanford, Mark, and I did on The Sword in the Stone. The three of us also did an episode on The Jungle Book, which is now out on the Disney Movie Marathon, and that'll be coming to iHeart Animation at some point after the Mary Poppins series. I also did a bunch of episodes with my friend Sam, however, most of them are being saved for my new podcast later this year. I think one of the main themes of the new podcast is going to be, like, nostalgic movies and things I've never seen before, so most of what I watch with Sam. So after I decided that was going to be the focus of the podcast, I started saving our episodes for the new show. But before I had decided that, one of my favorite episodes we did that I released was on one of her favorite childhood movies, Big Trouble in Little China. This year, for my animation ranking, I did something different. Katie and I have been doing a best-to-worst ranking since 2019, but this year her life has become too busy to podcast, so I decided to rethink my strategy for the ranking. I had several people join me for a few episodes, each giving their favorite animated movie of 2025, and then Larry Chilson and Eli Sanza joined me for the final official ranking. Thankfully, Katie was able to find time to join me for a short episode going over our top five, so she didn't have to completely sit out. On every version ever, I started the year out doing Alice in Wonderland with Jenna West, aka Phantomwise. Most of those were episodes I had released in the previous year on my main channel as episodes of Wonderland Wednesday, but we did do a few new episodes, including covering a piece of lost media that turned up at the beginning of the year, Alice in Russia Land. After that series, I started one that, unbeknownst to me, would take over almost my entire year, talking about versions of Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, and Cinderella. I think my favorite episode of that was when Nikki and I covered Ever After, one of the best versions of Cinderella of all time. But some other highlights were talking to Callum from Once Upon a VHS again, covering three episodes of Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater that fit into the series, and several episodes I did with Lisa Faye covering a bunch of quote-unquote terrible versions of the story, some actually terrible, like Cinderfella, which neither of us liked, and some terrible in the sense that they were so bad it was good, like A Snow White Christmas, which we covered for Christmas in July. And speaking of Christmas in July, an accidental discovery with Dan happened when I suggested what I thought was a British Christmas version of Sleeping Beauty called Sleeping Beauty Uncovered. When we got together to record that episode, Dan informed me that this was actually a British pantomime, and that led to us doing a whole series on pantomime, covering versions of Cinderella as well as the British folktale of Dick Whittington. We even got Jenna to join us for the last couple, covering a bunch of Dick Whittington adaptations and the CBeebies pantomime version of Alice in Wonderland. Back to Christmas in July, one episode which will eventually be on every version ever, but for this year was just a one-off for iHeart Animation, or actually a two-off. A listener requested that for Christmas in July I cover a stop-motion version of the Nutcracker called Nutcracker Fantasy. I went into this one thinking it was by Rankin Bass, but it turned out that it was made by one of the studios that Rankin Bass outsources to, and Rankin Bass had no involvement at all. Not only that, there was also a Japanese version of the movie, which was not just a dub, but almost an entirely different production, even though it used like 80% of the same animation. So we had to go back and cover that as well. And I ended up liking the Japanese version better than the American one. Back to the main series on Every Version Ever. Some other favorite episodes are one I did with Conrado Falco on a Spanish black and white silent version of Snow White, which reimagines her as a bullfighter in early 1900s Spain, as well as a couple episodes on Disney's Maleficent films with Nikki and Larry. Then towards the end of that series, I did a mini-series within the mini-series, something specifically made for all three of my podcasts. Jenna and Callum both joined me to do a three-part series on Disney's Snow White, starting with the original 1937 film, then going back to the 1916 film that originally inspired Walt Disney, and then jumping forward to the present to discuss the recently released and much maligned live-action remake of Snow White. Jenna and I also did one extra podcast afterwards with Mark talking about a long-forgotten stage play adaptation of Disney's Snow White. Then for Christmas, I did a couple more experimental episodes, one with Rachel and one with Nikki and Mark, pitching new versions of favorite Christmas stories. Rachel and I did A Christmas Carol, Miracle on 34th Street, and It's a Wonderful Life, and then Nikki, Mark, and I did just A Christmas Carol, but we did two versions, a good one and a purposely bad one. Those were so much fun to do, and I might end up doing something like that again at some point in the future, if the opportunity arises. Like I've been doing every year since I started these, I also wanted to take a moment to log my stats from the previous year. I feel like things slowed down a bit growth-wise, however, I passed 1,000 subscribers on both my main channel and my Every Version Ever YouTube channel. For consistency's sake, all the numbers I will be quoting I took down at the beginning of the year, even though it's now February, so some of these are already slightly outdated, but I wanted year-to-year consistency, so I made note of these a month ago. On my main channel, last year on January 1st, 2025, I was at 774 subscribers, and this year I started at 1,012. That's a growth of 238, slightly higher than last year's 226. So things are going up, but slowly. And I should say, as I've mentioned in years past, I don't actually care about growth that much. I just think it's fun to track these stats. The only thing I really care about with these numbers is that it would be nice to make some money for my podcasts, which I am now one step closer to with passing 1,000. But again, it's not that big a deal. I like podcasting regardless, or I wouldn't have been doing this for the last nearly a decade. On Every Version Ever, again, I hit 1,000 subscribers, but I did so before the main channel, which is what I figured would happen based on the rate of growth I'd been having. Last year, on January 1st, 2025, I was at 796 subscribers, 22 more than the main channel. That was 367 new subscribers in 2024, compared to 147 from the previous year. This year, on January 1st, I hit 1,076. That's 64 more than the main channel. That was a growth of 280, down from the previous 367, which had more than doubled the year before that when I had gained 147 in 1 year. We'll see if this trend keeps going, and if Every Version Ever goes backwards, or stalls out, it would be interesting if the main channel could overtake the second channel again. On the Disney Movie Marathon, as of January 1st, 2025, I was at 218, and I'd gained 169 from the previous year. This year, I am at 375, so we gained 157 subscribers, which again is a bit of a drop-off, and I have a feeling that trend will continue as I have some changes to the channel in the works. And that brings me to my next bit of stats that I only started tracking last year, but with all the changes I've been making, I'm leaving Spotify, and last year I started tracking my Spotify followers. I still have my podcast available there, so I can see how many followers they have there, but if I end up fully pulling out of Spotify by next year, I may no longer keep this section in future updates. But since I started last year, I might as well follow through with the stats this time, at least for this year's recap. But for the time being, my Spotify follower counts are as follows. Last year I had 89 followers on iHeartAnimation. This year I have 109. That's a growth of 20, and by far the biggest growth of all three of my podcasts. Last year I had 62 followers on Every Version Ever. This year I have 72, for a growth of just 10. And the least growth, which was kind of surprising since it had previously been the fastest growing of my podcast, last year I had 175 followers on the Disney Movie Marathon, and this year I have 184, with the growth of just 9. Now on to my episode creation stats. As always, episodes are shared between shows, so adding the numbers from all three podcasts will not make up my total, but I was actually very surprised this year. It seems like I always say I had planned on doing fewer episodes each year and somehow end up beating the previous year, and I truly didn't think I was going to have time to do as much as I did back in 2024, but this year I matched it exactly. I made 75 total brand new episodes across all my podcasts in 2025, which somehow is the exact same number I'd made in 2024. And then last year I made 67 podcasts for my main YouTube channel, and this year I made 66. I briefly thought about counting this as the finale so I could say I did the same number, but it's now February. I'm not even going to try to pretend this is part of my 2025 season. After that, we have iHeart Animation, and this was the first full year where it was a standalone podcast. I ended iHeart Movies in 2024, so I stopped uploading every episode I made to that feed, but I still ended up releasing 50 episodes on the iHeart Animation podcast this season. And then, not that it matters as much in the grand scheme of things, but on every version ever I did actually cut back, I made just 40 episodes as opposed to 48 from the previous year. On the Disney Movie Marathon, I ended up with the exact same number as last year with 40, and I feel like it will definitely go down this year as I'm both taking extra time off from the Disney Movie Marathon so I can focus on the new podcast, but I'm also switching to an every other week schedule, for real this time. We'll see what the actual number is when I get through 2026. I have a long list of episodes I want to do, so we'll see if these changes actually shrinks my output, or if I inevitably ramp up production so I can get to more things that I want to cover, like I always seem to default back to. But I have so many things I want to do this year, I really need to pick a schedule and stick to it. So, every other week. Anyway, moving on. Something new I decided I wanted to start tracking this year, and I'm not sure why I never thought of this before, but I thought it would be fun to see which of my episodes got the most views. Depending on what the future analytics look like when I change hosts next year, I might add audio listeners, but as of right now, the Spotify analytics didn't look like they were going to make much of a difference, so I'm going to go based on YouTube stats alone. For the main YouTube channel, where I have the JohnCast and iHeart Animation, the highest number of views came from Ever After with 5,294. And I should say that I used the new YouTube analytics chatbot thing to quickly gather these stats. I guess I'm just trusting that something with a narrower focus will have more correct knowledge than just any AI. Anytime I've used something like ChatGPT, it's been painfully obvious that it's a piece of trash. If you ever sign up to be a patron, check out the extended episode of A Snow White Christmas I did with Lisa. We had a whole hilarious discussion after that episode about what a tragically terrible job it did when I tried to use it to help take notes. It is insanely bad at what it does. Anyway, I used the YouTube analytics thing, and I typed the prompt in wrong at first, and I got the highest viewed video overall in 2025, which was my episode with Sam from a couple years ago on Ridley Scott's Legend, which got 9,576 views in 2025. The second most viewed new release last year was The Sword in the Stone with 4,810. And then after that, it was Christmas Comes to Packland with 1,625, the extended re-release of my Alice in Wonderland episode with 1,234, and then the first episode of the Wallace and Gromit miniseries with 486. And all of these have kept going up the last month, so it will be interesting to see what these stats look like next year. On my Every Version Ever YouTube channel, I decided to type in the incorrect prompt again and get the most viewed overall video on purpose this time. And here it was a much older episode, one I did on the 1995 film Sabrina with Chelsea Robinson, and that one got 29,638 views last year alone. I don't know what it is about that episode, but between that and the 1949 Little Women, which got 27,672 views, those two episodes alone have pretty much dominated my channel since I released them. No idea why. After that, it's not really even close. The next one is Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland with 6,984, Cinderella Christmas, the 2016 rom-com with 6,370, and then the original Disney Cinderella with 5,395. Of the ones I actually released last year, Mickey's Adventures in Wonderland wins with 1,821 views, with Cinderfella coming in second with 1,438. After that is Cinderella in the Caribbean with 603, and then definitely not performing as well on this channel, but Ever After got 486 views on Every Version Ever. On the Disney Movie Marathon, overall, The Nutcracker Prince was the winner with 19,480 views. Song of the South was in second with 11,957. It's odd that both of these are also released on other channels, but for whatever reason, the algorithm loves to deliver them on this channel. Of the episodes released last year, Mary Poppins wins with 6,352 views. It'll be interesting to see if it fares any different when it releases on iHeart Animation. And again, not as good as on the main channel, but still better than every version ever. Ever After Here got 1,215 views. Sword in the Stone got 952 views, and The Unidentified Flying Oddball got 717. So, I think that's all I've got for stats. Normally I would do some updates here, and I recorded a whole update section when I started this episode, but I've had so much going on recently that I scrapped the whole ending and did an update all by itself last week. So if you want some specifics on what's coming, definitely check that out. Otherwise, new episodes are on their way to all my podcasts. Just give me a couple weeks to get some things edited, and we'll be back in business for 2026.